Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I want to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We are in the Billy Meier case, contact report 150. This contact occurred right around 1980, and Billy is speaking with an extraterrestrial man named Quetzal, who is about 376 years old. He was the commander of all of the Pleiadian stations in our solar system. And I'll pick up here where Quetzal starts to tell Billy about Saturn. Quetzal says, "It will be so and still more, as you already could conclude by yourself on your great voyage. At the place and location, there revolve around Saturn 29 moons that are actually to be beholded as such. They are expected to be discovered in the entire number approximately up to in about 25 years by probes and telescopes." So before this contact, they were under the impression there were 10 or 12 moons around Saturn. And then they discovered 29 when the Voyager went out there. Now, what is the Voyager? The Voyager program is an American scientific program that launched two unmanned space missions. The probes Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, they were launched in 1977. And what had happened was all the planets in our solar system had lined up, and that would make it really easy for Voyager to go past these planets and get a whole bunch of information at once. So that was the idea behind the Voyager program. I have a clip here that I think you'll find interesting. I'll go ahead and play maybe 5 or 10 minutes of this clip. You can find it on YouTube. It's called Cosmic Journeys, Voyager Journey to the Stars.
They are part of an ancient quest to push beyond our boundaries, to see what lies beyond the horizon. Now, tens of billions of kilometers from Earth, two spacecraft are streaking out into the void. What will we learn about the galaxy, the universe, and ourselves from Voyager's epic journey to the stars? December 19th, 1972. The splashdown of the Apollo 17 crew capsule marked the end of the golden age of manned spaceflight. The Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo programs had proven that we could send people into space. To orbit the Earth. Fly out beyond our planet. Then land on the moon and walk among its ancient craters.
We'll pick back up in that clip in a second. Billy says in this contact, "It's clear to me, but since we're already talking about celestial bodies, I still have another question concerning Saturn. As it is known to you, the American space probe Voyager travels past Saturn and sends recorded images to Earth. To my knowledge, it has been argued until now that Saturn only has 10 or 12 moons, although it is true that there are 29 if I omit the Adoniden." Now, the Adoniden that Billy's referring to are these small fragments. And actually, these are fragments of the destroyed planet Melona there was an additional planet in our solar system that was destroyed in the ancient past when the inhabitants of that world, they routed an ocean into a volcano which caused a great explosion which destroyed planet Melona. Now, Saturn, eventually the gravity of Saturn pulled some of these fragments back, and now they're currently, if you look it up on Wikipedia, it'll show 60 moons of Saturn. But Meyer material says that the smaller ones are really the fragments of the destroyed planet Melona. So let's pick back on up our clip.
Time after time, we're surprised by seeing things that we had not expected or even imagined. The volcanoes erupting from a moon isle. The possibility of a liquid water ocean under the icy crust of Europa. Titan, where we found an atmosphere. Uranus, small moon Miranda, which had one of the most complex geologic surfaces we've seen. Even at Neptune, Triton, 40 degrees above absolute zero, even there were geysers erupting.
It's the only spacecraft that's gone by Uranus. It's the only spacecraft that's gone by Neptune. Everything we know about those planets, we know from Voyager.
To see those first pictures coming in from the outer solar system, for the first time, what had been a point of light in the sky was a place.
The journey was made possible by a rare alignment of the planets, a configuration that occurs only once every 176 years. That enabled the craft to go from planet to planet, accelerating as they entered the gravitational field of one, then flying out to the next. The Voyagers carried a battery of scientific equipment to collect data on the unknown worlds in their path. That included a pair of Vidicom cameras and a data transfer rate slower than a dial-up modem.
So that was the Voyager program. Actually, there were two unmanned space missions, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2. These probes went past Saturn, which is the sixth planet in order from the Sun. It's the second largest planet in our solar system. It's encompassed by a series of thin, flat rings composed of small particles of ice. Saturn is considered a gas giant with an average radius about nine times that of Earth. So this contact starts out where Billy is speaking with the extraterrestrial Quetzal about the Voyager 1 and the Voyager 2 mission and how they were just discussing these moons of Saturn and some of the moons of Jupiter as well. And then the topic of conversation switched to actually Pope John Paul II. And I'll read, starting in line 173 of the contact, it says, "Towards the end of April or the beginning of May, the Pope of Rome will again dissipate the monies of his believers, because once again he will begin an extremely expensive trip to different countries, which will cost many millions of dollars. Thus, he will visit Portugal, where he will hypocritically let it be announced that the Madonna of Fatima had come to protect him, helping him survive an assassination attempt." Evidently, John Paul II, another Catholic priest, in fact, tried to kill him. And this Pope, John Paul II, claimed it was the Madonna of Fatima, which is, of course, the Virgin Mary, protected him. Here's a clip on John Paul II. It's more of a propaganda piece rather than a historical view on John Paul, but I thought it'd be interesting to hear a bit of this and contrast it with what Billy had to say.
Soon the smiling image of John Paul II will once again adorn St. Peter's Square. He will officially be recognized as a saint of the church, making him an example for Catholics around the world. But in his 26-year pontificate, it can be easy to overlook some of the key points that marked his life and his papacy. So here are a few examples. Humanity. Karol Wojtyła was passionate about life and the arts. He loved poetry and drama, and in fact, he used to be an actor himself and wrote a play before he was ordained a priest. A key moment in his life was when he was employed in a chemical factory.
Questa esperienza, esperienza di un operaio e nello stesso tempo di un seminarista.
You notice there it mentioned that he was an actor. Well, and Billy said that most of the time when he was speaking, he was acting. Back in line 175, it says, however, with this consciously mendacious and fraudulent allegation to his believers, he will encourage the hatred of a Catholic priest of a different faith who will want to kill him and will attack him with a dagger. But this will be thwarted by the security personnel before the priest arrives in the direct vicinity of the Pope. So there was an attempt on this man's life. Let's hear more of what this clip has to say.
Trusting God, he prepared for the priesthood at a clandestine seminary founded by the then Cardinal of Krakow. And because of the tense atmosphere, he was ordained in secret. He always challenged everyone to not be afraid of life's difficulties.
Non abbiate paura.
He never denied his health problems. In fact, he would even joke about them every now and then.
Come vedete, è un papa un po' deficiente, deficiente ma non ancora decaduto.
He underlined the importance of conscience instead of hatred, and this, he said, was.
Okay, let's find out a little more background information about this pope. The pope at the time of this writing, his real name was Karol Joseph Wojtyła, and he was known as Pope John Paul II. He was the pope of the Catholic Church from October 6, 1978 until his death April 2nd of 2005, this pope visited Portugal. Portugal is located on the coast of Europe adjacent to Spain. By the way, the pope is considered the bishop of Rome and the leader of the worldwide Catholic Church. In this thing I just read, it talked about Our Lady of Fatima, which is the title of the Virgin Mary, based on apparitions reported by three shepherd children at Fatima. Fatima was a supposed religious vision, and I think it was more of an extraterrestrial event, and I think it might have been sponsored by the Giza intelligences. Anyway, the Pope claimed that the Madonna of Fatima saved him from an assassination attempt. Again, Fatima is a place in Portugal where a religious vision was seen October 13, 1917. The 70,000 pilgrims in attendance witnessed the miracle of the sun. And according to these witnesses, after a period of rain, the dark clouds broke and the sun appeared as an opaque spinning disc in the sky. Sound familiar? Sounds a lot like a extraterrestrial craft to me, or some kind of anti-gravity electrogravitic type craft. It was said to be significantly duller than normal and to cast multicolored lights across the landscape. And again, I wonder if this wasn't the Giza intelligences actually producing this vision. Billy described the Pope as mendacious, which means telling lies, especially habitually dishonest, lying, unfruitful. In fact, Billy stated that the Pope did not even believe what he was saying most of the time, and that he was a bad actor. So the conversation between Billy and Quetzal goes on, and the topic changes to the Falkland Islands. And Billy is now given another future event, a prophecy regarding this war. It says, besides this, he will also strive to arrive in Argentina in order to break in on the population with his dishonest manner regarding the war between Argentina and England. So I guess this pope visited Argentina. During the month of April 1982, the Argentinians will military garrison the Falkland Islands, which are under the English colony, whereupon England will then send out a fleet through which a veritable guerrilla war will emerge between the two countries, which will demand many human lives and war material. This war will be a sign of the threatening Third World conflagration in the third millennium. Remember the Meyer material way back when Billy had his first contacts with Sthoth talked about the day and the time that we're in as the third millennium. And the third millennium began when the United States dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And since that time, we've entered a time of confusion and maliciousness and a slowly approaching global collapse. I have a YouTube video here called The Greatest Mysteries of War, The Falkland Islands. I've, of course, converted it into an MP3, as I always do, so you guys can listen. Now let's listen to a little bit of our clip here on the Falkland Islands War. It was interesting. This was a very historic war for several reasons.
In April 1982, an invasion by Argentina provoked one of the most ambitious military undertakings in British history. Britain sent a naval task force and 15,000 men to fight for a small group of islands on the edge of the Antarctic. Britain was at war with Argentina, but the odds were spectacularly uneven. I look at the challenges that faced the British, struggling to fight 8,000 miles from home, while the Argentinians were fighting on their own doorstep.
They had to fight up here in freezing conditions on exposed hilltops and across wide, open ground.
I'll experience how the British troops used darkness to their advantage against a well-defended enemy.
It was one of the most improbable conflicts ever. More than 30,000 men went to war over a group of barren and windswept islands that were home to only 2,000 people.
This is the story of the battle for the Falklands.
The Falkland Islands War was a 10-week war between Argentina and the United Kingdom over two British overseas territories in the South Atlantic, the Falkland Islands, the South Sandwich Islands, and South Georgia. Let's pick back up on our clip here.
Looked like a sleepy little seaside town somewhere in the British Isles. In fact, the United Kingdom is 8,000 miles away. These are the Falkland Islands, a remote British territory in the South Atlantic. The nearest mainland is Argentina, just 400 miles to the west. Life for the 2,500 people who live here is isolated, hardy, and undisturbed. But in April 1982, all that changed, when these islands became the setting for the last invasion of British territory.
On April 2nd, 1982, about 100 Argentinian Marines landed here on the Falklands. Their objective? To capture the capital, Stanley.
They were the advance party. There were 2,000 more men on their way. But the job of these Marines was to seize the town and force the British governor of the islands to surrender.
Soon, the extraordinary news of...
That's the Falkland Island War. Billy again in 1982 had a contact with an extraterrestrial man named Quetzal. He was one of the Pleiaren. The Pleiaren originally allowed themselves to be called the Pleiadians, but they're not from our Pleiades. They're from a star system some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades in a different space-time configuration. The Pleiaren are extraterrestrial humans, and they're involved in Billy's life because you might call them his mentors. The spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer has reincarnated on the earth at least six other times. He's been Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, Muhammad. And the purpose of his life, again, is to teach this ancient universal teaching called the teaching of the spirit, the teaching of life. And it's supposed to help get us through this third millennium that we've been discussing here. So Quetzal is giving him some prophetic information. He's telling him about Pope John Paul II. He's discussing the Falkland Islands war, which is a war that was going on at this time. And now the topic changes again. One of the things these extraterrestrials were doing and still are doing to a certain degree is that they impulse people on the earth to do certain things that would be helpful for us. And Quetzal describes that there's a group of people that are being impulsed to make a movie about Billy's life. And Quetzal says, I already explained to you at an earlier date that this work must be completed no later than the end of 1982, because after that you will have no more time for it. For this reason, we have set all responsible persons in America under our pertinent, purpose-oriented impulse radiations, through which they will lead to work more intensively. And as things now look, it seems that around the 25th of April, 1982, the film work will be started. So the film will come about in the foreseeable time. Anyway, the film that they're talking about, I think, is called Contact. If you Google or search in YouTube for Contact Billy Edward A. Meyer documentary, you should find it. I'll have to make some clips of that. I have in the past. I have certainly played clips on that in the past, but I don't have any modern clips of that. Okay, the topic of conversation changes again. Quetzal starts to tell Billy about the leader of Israel in 1982, which was Menachem Begin. And Billy already had some knowledge about Menachem Begin and some of his own opinions. So let's pick up here in line 205 of Contact 150. Mainly it concerns in relation to this that the criminal interest of the would-be statesman Begin, who will commit further terrible crime under the eyes of the world public, without that, the rest of the world intervenes and ends the terrible killings. In the middle of 1982, Begin will demonstrate his true character with full power when he allows an attack on the capital of Beirut in the country of Lebanon and allows it to be destroyed, for the most part, whereby many thousands of innocent people, women and children will be killed. The murderly degenerate Menachem Begin will thereby give excuses that will find attention in the United Nations and in the rest of the world, although behind Begin's actions lies hidden nothing else than the lunatic greed for spilling of human blood, as well as the lust for sovereign power over the entire country and its ethnic groups. Now, Menachem Begin was the sixth prime minister of the State of Israel, and he authorized the bombing of the Osirak nuclear plant in Iraq and the invasion of Lebanon in 1982. The bombing of the Osirak reactor was a surprise Israeli airstrike carried out on June the 7th, 1981, which destroyed the Iraqi nuclear reactor under construction. This 1982 Lebanon war began on June the 6th, 1982, when the Israeli Defense Forces invaded southern Lebanon. I played a little bit yesterday of this interesting clip called Eagle Over Lebanon. It's a documentary on YouTube. It talks about the F-15 Eagles that the Israelis used in this 1982 Lebanon war. Billy refers to Begin as a cowardly pig and a scoundrel without an equal. Billy mentioned that Menachem Begin was a psychopath. Now, a person with a psychopathic personality manifests antisocial, amoral behavior with a lack of ability to love or establish meaningful relationships, extreme egocentricity, failure to learn from experience. Now, I'm not sure if I still have the clip on the OSIREC reactor or if I can find it. Might be fun to play a little bit of that. And we'll listen to that, assuming I can find it. Yeah, there it is. I misspelled it, but that's okay. F-16s will go in and take out this reactor. Listen to this clip. It's pretty interesting.
At 3 p.m., the pilots marched onto the runway, climbed into their planes, and took off. This is the actual footage they recorded. The pilots could not communicate with each other for fear of being detected by the enemy's radar.
From the moment you go out from the briefing room up to the moment you pull up for the attack, there is no one single word on the radio communication in order not to expose yourself for on the intelligence system on the other side. So it's a kind of a silent movie, and each one with himself, with his documents in the cockpit, maps.
The flying time is 1 hour 35. The location of the target was in the middle of the state of Iraq, 17 miles south of Baghdad. So the main concern wasn't the long flight of 600 miles, but the last 70 miles.
A second formation of Israeli F-15s provided cover for the F-16 bombers, ready to attack the Iraqis if they started to shoot. And then they saw the target.
Even before we pulled up from low altitude to higher altitude, one could see the walls they built.
Ironically, Saddam had built these walls to protect the reactor after the Iranian raid.
The dome was a kind of a gold type. The sun was western, low angle, so when the explosion took place, the whole thing went up in the air and glistened in the setting sun. And it was just a great moment, except that there was no music.
The entire attack took 2 minutes. Now it was time to break away, quickly. Iraqi jets and missiles would certainly be launched. One by one, the Israeli pilots radioed each other. They completed the mission.
90 minutes away from home, and a lot of flying in Iraq.
The pilots, now all accounted for, braced themselves for the worst. Saddam's billion-dollar arsenal of jets and missiles in hot pursuit. But then, something inexplicable happened. Absolutely nothing. No missiles, no Iraqi jets, just a beautiful sunset all the way home. At 7 that evening, the jets landed.
So the Iraqis under Menachem Begin destroyed the OSIREC nuclear reactor. They also invaded Lebanon in the war against Lebanon in 1982. What does Edward Albert Meyer have to say about this? He says Begin is in the same sick hospital as Khomeini. cowardly, deceitful, mean, selfish, power hungry, psychopathic, validity addicted, domineering, a megalomaniac, and who is otherwise burdened with all of the malignancies into which a person could have lapsed. He is an absolute degenerate and undignified of life. So let's talk a little bit about Ayatollah Khomeini. Billy and Quetzal start to discuss Ayatollah Khomeini. Ayatollah Khomeini was a Iranian religious leader and politician, a leader of the 1979 Iranian Revolution. Ayatollah Khomeini waged a holy war against the Shah of Iran. The Shah of Iran promoted Western culture, and this array enraged a lot of the Islamic Iranian people. The Shah was kept in power by this vicious security force. Following the revolution, Khomeini became Iran's supreme leader, and he executed opposing members by the tens of thousands. Khomeini is described as domineering by Billy. Domineering means to be inclined to rule arbitrarily or despotically, overbearing, tyrannical. Billy also describes him as megalomaniacal. And megalomania is an obsession with doing extravagant or grand things. Now we have a clip here on Ayatollah that you may find interesting. It looks like I have a caller. I better go ahead and try to take this call. Well, they just disappeared. Let me see if 661, state your name and where you're calling from.
Yes, my name is Ahura Mazda. That means I light and life of wisdom. So Ahura Mazda is ancient from Iran. I'm sure you know Ahura Mazda. And regarding Iran you are talking, I am the one of the person you want to talk to because I have a lot of information about Middle East, and especially your subject is Iran tonight. So go ahead and play the clip that you wanted to do, please, and then we can go from there, my friend.
Oh, sounds great. Okay. Well, I'll bring you back on in a few minutes. Thanks for calling. Hang on.
You're welcome, my friend.
Okay. Well, that's really interesting. We have a first-hand person with knowledge. Let me play this clip of Ayatollah. I have to first find it, guys. Just hang with me a minute. You know, I got a lot of clips here. I have to kind of search for him. It's interesting that I don't know if I'm going to be able to get into all of this evening, but, and I don't even know if this is the exact clip. I think it is. There's a lot of information to do with Begin and Ayatollah Khomeini, and it's really shocking the things that went on during this time. So let's play part of this clip, and then we'll bring the caller back on. Okay, I think we got a little dead air at the beginning of this clip. Here we go.
This man changed the world. He took Iran and made it an inspiration for a new, uncompromising strand of Islam.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
His Iran broke all the rules of diplomacy. It unleashed forces the West still cannot handle. It has undermined the West's hold on the Middle East.
Iran is deliberately causing maximum problems.
Iran is a threat to world peace.
I will do everything in my power to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. Everything in my power.
آمریکا و انگلیس رو نگاه بکنید. هر جا دیکتاتوری و ترور و آدمکشی است، دست اونها در کاره.
This series tells the inside story of how for 30 years Iran has baffled and defeated Western leaders. Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini spent 14 years banished from his native Iran. From neighboring Iraq, he waged a holy war against the Shah of Iran. In the autumn of 1978, Iraq's leader, Saddam Hussein, presented the Shah with a startling choice.
وقتی که جریان سالیانه سازمان ملل بود، وزیر خارجه عراق با وزیر خارجه ما امیر خسرو افسار صحبت کرده بود و پیامی از صدام داشت. در این پیام این بود که اگر که بخواید این رو از اینجا به خارج میفرستیم و همینطور اگر که علاقمند باشید حتی باید الیمیت بشید.
The Shah was cautious.
In those days we thought that if somebody get rid of Khomeini he will become like a martyr and he become even greater.
Mohammad Reza Pahlavi had ruled Iran for almost 40 years.
شاهنشاه کشور شاهنشاهی ایران به مردم این سرزمین باستانی.
He lived in a world apart from his people. He was kept in power by a vicious security service and the fifth largest army on earth, equipped with American weaponry. He ignored calls for democracy. He let the nation's vast oil wealth go only to the few. He promoted Western culture, enraging millions of Muslims. Many groups resented the Shah. They came together under Khomeini's banner.
چه اونها که تمایلات مذهبی داشتن در دین امام خواستهای خودشون برآورده میکردن. اونهایی هم که نه دیدگاه آزادی خواهانه داشتن ولو لائیک گروه های سیاسی زیادی بودن باز هم در امام به عنوان چهره مبارز یک رهبر مبارز نیرومند که همه مردم تونست دور خودش بسیج کرده شخصیتی میدیدن که میتونن در حمایت از او قام بردارن برای آزادی کشورشون.
The Shah's government banned public gatherings. During one rally in Tehran, troops shot more than 100 demonstrators dead.
ولی منتظر بودیم که پیام امام بیاد. و اون پیام حضرت امام که منتشر شد گفتن حضرت امام فرموده که کسی خیابونا رو ترک نکنه از همونجا دیگه تا پیروزی انقلاب دیگه مردم تو خیابون بودن اصلا.
From Iraq, Imam Khomeini was causing havoc in Iran. The Shah declined Saddam's offer to kill him but agreed to his being expelled. Khomeini sought refuge in Kuwait.
Well, that's a very interesting clip on the Ayatollah Khomeini. It's about 10 minutes long. I won't play all of it. I think I have another even longer one. But I do have a subject matter expert on the line here. And I would like to ask the caller, what are your thoughts on the Ayatollah Khomeini?
Ahura Mazda says hello to all your listeners and worldwide listeners of your show. First of all, during the clip, there was some Persians, they were talking, and a few of the speeches, they said that all crisis was manufactured by Americans. And then the second time, then you saw that they were talking Persian. Ayatollah was saying that America and Israel, all things are made by them, killings of the masses and all the wars around the globe, and the killing the Muslims around the globe. Israel and America is doing so. They call Israel little shaitan and they call America as great shaitan. And so that was the second part of the Persian And the third part was talking about BBC of London, that in Persian section gave the last speech of the Imam Khomeini, that had stayed in the streets until the victory of the revolution. So go ahead, so, please.
Are you your name is Ahura Mazda, correct?
That's true, yes.
Okay. Are you of the opinion that the Ayatollah was a good guy?
No, Ahura Mazda. No. We are ancient religions in Iran, and our belief system are based on good thoughts, good deeds, good behavior. Tell me what kind of good deeds this man brought to the Iran and the world, and good behavior and good work. What? None of it. So this man is not from, God. And this man is just made by, MI6 of London.
Yep.
Queen of London. And so, we are so upset with Queen of London. Yes.
So you're saying Ayatollah Khomeini was put in power by the Queen of London, MI6
That's
or
true.
Whatever.
That's true. So because the Shah of Iran 5 years back ago said in one speech, you can find it also on YouTube, that he said, we agreed to OPEC for 25 years. And the 25 years is up by 1979. Mm. I am not going to resign and be part of OPEC anymore. I am going to sell my oil justly and any amounts that I want. You don't want to buy it, I sell it to somebody else. You don't want to buy it, go to the hell. That's why I restore it in my own reserve. And isn't that true? Right after his message, 5 years, and then 1979, fall of the Shah of Iran.
So the Shah didn't want to deal with OPEC anymore. So he was pushed out of power by the Queen of England and the United States. Is that what you're saying?
The Queen of London had 90% hands, and United States had a little bit, and European country, they had some hands, especially when they give him a free pass, free ticket from Paris to Tehran. Tell me, can you go to any airport in your country or anywhere that people are listening to my voice? Go there and tell Air France, I don't have the money. Please give me a ride back to Paris and come back. I want free ride. They will say, no, you're out of your mind. Are you crazy? But they give to this his thugs and his him and other people. All the plane was full. So the free gas, free petroleum, free everything they give free. You know how much cost that plane to land to Tehran? Millions of dollars.
Mm. So is it true that Ayatollah Khomeini was responsible for a lot of abuse of women in Iran?
Yes. Absolutely, I appreciate you asking me that. Women in Iran are in prison as we speak because their hijab or burqa or whatever you label it, or their Islamic dress is a little bit off, and they have a police called Zainab police, or sister Zainab police, that is very cruel to these women. And, you know, so they're supposed to first give them a warning verbally. And if second time they catch it, they're supposed to give him a to give them a ticket. Then the third time, they take it to the Evin prison and to be raped by the Revolutionary Guards and their talk.
That's yeah, right. That's my information, is that a lot of these women were raped and brutally,
right.
Some of them were brutally killed also. Is that true?
That's right. That's true. One of them was a Canadian journalist. Let me just put it in the web right now. Canadian raped in Iran, and while we are talking about that, I'm finding there are many other women in Iran. They were captured and raped, and her name was Zahra Kazemi from Canada. And she had a dual citizenship. And one day she was trying to get, you know, Evin prison, some pictures. They catch her. And basically Zahra Kazemi was raped brutally with gangs of the Revolutionary Guards. And basically at one point, they push her head so hard against the wall that she got a shock, and she basically 70% dead. Then they threw her off the steps of the prison. And they cover up their story. These people are brutal. And yet, in Iran, if somebody is not a virgin and they give them raw, they hang them. And according to Islam, they have to rape that lady or the daughter, because they say if she's virgin, she will go to heaven. So in order for that, they gang rape her before they kill her. Tell me, what kind of religion teaches you that? This is only a demonic religion, demonic in nature, shaitanic and Luciferian in nature. Go ahead, please.
It's very strange. It seems I've met many Islamic people who are honorable and loving, and yet I hear and I study and I find out of these terrible, horrible abuses by Islamic people as well. Can you shed any light? I mean, certainly there are some honorable Islamic people.
I don't know. If you bring IQ Rasuli, just put Al Rasuli. Al Rasuli. Just Google it right now. IQ Al Rasuli. And you should find his website. Or Shubat.com. And you should bring these two people into your taco show as well. And you will see, according to IQ Al Rasuli, which he was Iraqi citizen before all this message comes. And so he is now living in somewhere in Europe. And so anyway, according to him, and he says 99% of the Muslims are here to bring Sharia law in United States and Europe and Canada and around the globe. and 99% of them are always give you an evil look, and they look at you like you are like a subhuman, like you are a subhuman. Am I right or wrong? Correct me, please.
If any time
I am wrong or you disagree, please jump in and tell me that you are not agree with what I'm saying.
I'm still learning when it comes to Islam and some of these people. Now, can you tell us more about Sharia law?
Oh, yeah, Sharia law is a law, is made, it's basically, for example, if a person is so hungry and steal a piece of bread, from the bakery or from, say, IGA, because we live in Canada, and so Canada, IGA, so according to them, they have to cut your hand.
Oh,
and Sharia law is one man is not equal to one woman. So basically, two. For example, if shahid means witness. For example, in some Sharia law, they go to the imam, and imam says, bring your witnesses. So the man bring one witness, but the woman needs to bring two witnesses. Or, in order to defeat him, needs to have four witnesses.
Hmm.
Because women are not equal with men. And for many other instances that I don't know if you saw the stoning of Sunaya M, if you
no.
saw that or not.
I did not know.
Okay. I advise you to see that movie. That movie is a horrific, but it's a true. That's what shows the Sharia law in Iran, and that shows not Iran, Saudi Arabia. I mean, we are concentrating right now in Iran, but other places. I mean, we will get to Iraq, we will get to Syria, we will get to ISIS or ICIS, and the raping of our Christian brothers and sisters, and not only them, other religions as well. And basically, they say, even you become a Muslim, they lie. Even if those people, they say, okay, we are going to become a Muslim. Don't hurt us. Don't rape us. Don't kill us. Don't do any bad things to us. But what they do, they say, as soon as they say, okay, we are Muslim, we believe, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah. Then, as soon as they say, they kill them again. It doesn't matter. So,
wow.
The reason is there is a law in Quran. This is Adovia. Adovia, let me tell you, you remember when Muhammad signed a treaty with the Quraysh, with the people in Mecca, the tribes said, okay, I am powerful enough. You guys, you scare from me. Okay, you don't need to become Muslim. I'm your friend. Don't worry. I will not let any harms come to you. So after signing the treaty of the Mecca, a peace treaty, and basically what happened, after so many months, he came and people opened the door of the, village and let him in. They say, wow, he's so good. He's so nice. He's our friend. So they put their guns slowly, slowly down as, you know, they get more comfortable with Muhammad. And then one day he came. He cut all the heads of the Jewish Quraishis and all the tribes from different cultures, different religions. And so they called him Adovia. So that's why when PLO, what was his name, Yasser Arafat, if you remember Yasser Arafat, signed a treaty, peace treaty with Israel. And it was in time of time of Bill Clinton. Am I right or wrong?
I think you're right.
So when he went go back to Palestine, do you know what happened? All the people of Palestine, they say, what's going on, Yasser Arafat? You are Mishnuni? That means you are crazy. You are doing this. We are making peace treaty with the enemy. He said, no, don't worry. Believe me, what I'm doing is the right thing. And then they ask him more. He said, this is what exactly Muhammad did. Muhammad Rasulullah did. And then the people understood. People opened their books and Haditha. And then they found out, yeah, it's right. So they called Adovia. We said, that means we don't need to respect that. We don't need to respect that. And even recently, very recently, we go back to Hamas, Hezbollah, which is supported by Ayatollah Khomeini. And what happened? When there was a peace treaty, any time during the war, recent war between Israel, Hamas and Israel, any time they sign it, after one, say, okay, less than half a day or hours away sometimes, they send missile back to Ashkelon, they send missile to Tel Aviv, and etc. Because they follow the rules of Muhammad, they call Adovia. That means it's okay, we can sign the peace treaty and we get more ammunition filled up, and it's a good way for us, you know, to get some more food and etc. And then we go back again to the square one. If I'm wrong, please correct me. I want your listeners call in and ask me question.
Well,
I mean, this is not the part one. I mean, we are going to call. I'm going to call your show regularly. I mean,
okay.
If you do it at the same time, what time do you usually do your show, brother?
Typically about 8 p.m. Eastern. I usually do my show, and a lot of times it'll be on Sunday evening. But I appreciate you calling in. I heard, Mazda, we are about out of time, and I appreciate hearing from someone who knows a lot about these things, Ayatollah Khomeini and Begin and things like that. Folks, I want to thank everyone for listening. This is Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we'll probably be back Sunday, if not Saturday afternoon at some point. Thanks a bunch.